friends, it's the podcast, the Bob McCallum podcast for a Monday, the first day of the week. Hope you're all well. Yours truly, along with John Shannon, as per usual, in the Big Smoke. And from Denver, Colorado, the president of the Vegas Golden Knights, George McPhee, is with us. You look beautiful, McPhee. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you.
I don't think anybody's ever called you beautiful, George.
No, that's a fair.
And I must say, I've always liked your logo, but it really pops on that color of sweater you've got there. I like that a lot. I want one.
Yeah. We're trying to we want to incorporate a little more gold into the uniforms, and you know, we have our third uniform that's gold, and yeah, it looks pretty nice.
That said, I loved the sweater you wore in Tahoe. I thought that red was spectacular.
Yeah, that really pops. They did a really good job with that. And we've got lots of red teams in the league, so we'll wear it our four or five times and then get back to our traditional.
When you say they did a good job with it, and I'm not overly critical of the NHL very often, you're one of the very few, because there's a lot of bad ones. I'm sorry, there are a lot of bad ones. They have just the NHL or somebody at Adidas has decided that gray is a really important color. And last I checked, gray is not a great color.
So. Yeah, unless it's your base, like our home uniforms are, and you can work around that. But when it's used in different ways in different uniforms, it makes it look a little recessive, you know.
Well, speaking of uniforms, and let's talk a little bit about the outdoor game that took like an entire day to play. What was it like looking at the Nordiques old uniforms there, more or less?
Well, I thought those looked great. and I understand why they want to wear them a lot this year. They've asked us to wear our home jerseys in their rink a few weeks from now, and we played them twice there because they want to wear them. that was kind of neat.
Joe Sakic is trying to go back to his playing days, I think. You know, when you remember, because Joe's, when he got drafted, he played there and wore that beautiful blue one, although the white one they wore against you guys on Saturday was spectacular.
That's what Quebec got for trading Dale Hunter. I think it was the 15th overall pick, and they picked Joe Sakic, right?
Yeah, well, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, right?
Yeah.
How do you don't have this situation. I mean, obviously you were an expansion team. You didn't come from anywhere else, but Colorado, obviously, were the Nordique. Everybody knows that. How do you think the fan base feels in Denver about those throwback uniforms that don't even represent their city?
Yeah, that's a good question, Bob. I don't know how they are reacting to those. They're nice looking, but what it does for Denver, I don't know.
Yeah.
Probably not a whole lot, but I guess the good news is we only wear them four or five times.
So talk a little bit about the Lake Tahoe game. I mean, the setting was beautiful. The concept of going there when you know you're not going to have fans, where you've got the scenery around there. And I guess there were a few people out on the lake watching from boats and things, but a good idea in principle, but did you have any concerns before this started? I'm wondering about, you know, playing during the day.
Our concern was how windy it might be, because the day before it was windy.
Yeah.
And so we had talked about making sure that we, in the third period, switch ends so that it's balanced for the game.
Yeah.
The sun was a surprise because it was cool enough, but the sun was intense. And you know what it's like from living in Vegas, how intense the the sun can be in this state. So it never came up until the guys were standing there for the national anthem. And I saw Alex Tuck doing something at the blue line, and there was a big hole at the blue line. And then, you know, every couple of minutes where there's more things to patch and more things, and it got dangerous. And Gary Bettman came in with a few minutes left to go in the first period. He said, okay, player safety is paramount here. And if we can't get this fixed, we're shutting it down. And we'll play later today. We'll play tomorrow morning, whatever. And that was fine with us. But it deteriorated quickly.
Mm-hmm. The issue of when you went back to play, the 9 p.m. local time Saturday versus Sunday morning, did you have a preference?
We were hoping to get it over with, to come right back and play. Because if we're not doing that, then we're, you're playing three in a row. You're playing Saturday, you're playing Sunday, you're playing Monday.
Yeah.
And both teams are playing their number one goalies, 1, 2, 3 in a row. It's probably too much for them, too much for the players. And the players were in that frame of mind. It was game day. So we were happy that we were able to play later. And it was, it was a different day for everybody. But when they got to the rink, they were ready to go. And it was a couple of real good periods of hockey.
What was the ice like in there for the second and third period? Was it?
Yeah, no issues at all. None. Yeah, there were no issues at all. They did a real good job of resurfacing, and there wasn't a single complaint that I heard.
Do you like the concept of outdoor games? I don't know. I can't remember. How many of you been involved with? Did you have any in Washington?
Two.
Yeah
I had when we were in, we played in Pittsburgh at Heinz Field when it rained a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And then I was all excited about the one at Nat Stadium, but something happened along the way. I was terminated in April and didn't get a chance to do that one. But so this was the second, and I thought it was extraordinary. I thought that the views were amazing. One of the most beautiful settings I've ever seen, and obviously really unique and historic for an NHL hockey game.
So, George, what good does it do for the game to play them, particularly one without fans?
Well, I think it's really unique, and it's promoted in a way where lots of people take interest, and you hope that you get great television ratings out of it. And because we can't have fans, that's what we need. We need great ratings. We need eyeballs watching our game. And it was a really, I watched part of the Boston Philly game last night, and some of those vistas, like those, the one view from the end, when you're looking through the rink and you see the lake in the background, that was amazing. So to see a competitive sport in that kind of setting, I thought was really neat. And the players love this. They all talk about their childhoods and everything else and playing outdoors. And I remember doing it in Guelph for years and playing that Saturday morning game downtown, the organized game. And you come home, you have lunch, and you play in either in your backyard, or we could go across the street to the park. We had both. And you play till dinner, and then you have something to eat and watch hockey. Yeah, go back out before hockey night in Canada. And when we got older, we would go out even after hockey night in Canada.
Sure.
So I think it's a great thing for all the people in the game. And I hope the game got good ratings, because it was a neat thing to see in my mind.
So Tahoe probably wouldn't happen unless you're in a pandemic, because there's an economic reality to all this.
Yeah.
And you know, the idea has been find the biggest stadiums you can, biggest football stadiums you can, try and put 100,000 people in there like they did in Michigan. And that sort of was the concept. But if the television ratings are okay, could you see doing this thing again? Now, maybe not Tahoe, but someplace else where your fan base would be extremely limited?
Yeah, I could see it happening again. Maybe they can do it in Alaska. Because it was, you know, it was sort of mystery Alaska like. And I'd be all for that because it really was unique to be there and be so close to it and hear it. You know, when you're in the stadiums, you can't hear what's going on the ice. The chatter from the players, the goalie makes the big save, you can hear your bench saying good things to him, the sound of the sticks, the skates, the shots. Mm-hmm. It was neat.
The interesting part of that, George, is that you would you'd like to be the visiting team because you don't want to be the home team giving up your gate. And that's the issue. I mean, when if they walked in and said, are you prepared? And I don't know how much your gate is, but let's say for the sake of argument, it's $1.5 million. Are you prepared to give up a gate of $1.5 million? That becomes the issue.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting, Shanny. And you're right on point there. That matters. Mm. And I'm not sure. You know, maybe there's, you know, the league, you know, when we start generating lots of revenues again, there may be a way that there's a payout from the league to do that, because if the ratings are good enough to warrant doing that and support it, then there's a way to reimburse the club.
That is the frustration of the Saturday afternoon being on NBC versus Saturday night being on the cable channel. And that's that was certainly, I think, disappointing. The one thing I noticed and I talked about actually on social media was where the cameras were and how close things were to the game. And if there isn't a lesson to be taught to every team in the league, you know, good television is really important for your product. And is there any way the league, the teams can understand how important it is to have cameras in the right spot? Because that's what they did in Tahoe. They had cameras in the right spot.
Good. And so you liked it, John? You liked what you were seeing with the...
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you're right about the pictures. You're right about the pictures. And once they solved the ice issue, and shadows and light and everything, but the fact that they had an opportunity to start with a blank canvas and put the cameras where they should be and allowed the cameras to move a little bit. And the close-ups were that much closer and the angles were that much better. That to me sold the game as much as anything.
Wow. Were they getting enough shots from the drones directly above?
Yeah, they were. But I mean, in the end, those are beauty. We call those beauty shots. Those are beauty shots.
Yeah.
But you know, lower and closer to the game. When you talk about hearing things and seeing things, if I can see them and at a right angle, I mean, that to me is something I would hope that the people in the New York office would take away and say to all the clubs, this is where cameras should be. This is what you should be doing. You know, in my time, George, and you and I had conversations about this. We tried to do this, but there was too much emphasis. And I got to sell those seats. Those seats are too important for me. But hopefully this might open some eyes.
Well, it's interesting. I thought maybe from the drone, if they were doing some analysis from the drones in terms of structure on the ice and systems play, what might be educational for people to watch. But I sure love the view from behind the net that took you down the ice, and you could see everything that was going on and the speed and see what players see when they get the puck, and are they finding the open man? Are they not? And how quickly things close up and options close. I thought that was a really neat view. And you just wonder if the cameras have to be that big. Could you not put one behind that doesn't take away seats?
Well, technology's improving all the time, George. Yeah. It's certainly worth a discussion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, you've lived in Vegas for a couple of years now. Have you made it up to Mount Charleston at all?
I have. Yep.
I'm wondering whether that's a venue that at some point you could explore too. Now, I know that you'd be talking about a similar kind of perspective as you got in Tahoe, but you know, it's a 45-minute drive from Las Vegas.
Right. And it's amazing. You can leave the heat of Vegas and drive up there and see pine trees and some snow.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. We used to go on regularly in the wintertime on a Sunday morning. You get up and have breakfast on the patio outside in the back of your house by the pool, jump in the car, head to the ski hill. Kids would ski till 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You come back down, you have a barbecue and jump in the pool, and you can do it all in one day. It's pretty remarkable, isn't it?
Or go hit some balls.
Or go hit some balls. Yeah, exactly. You got to be generally pleased with the performance of your hockey team so far this year. A loss to Colorado in that outdoor game, 3-2. But all in all, teams played pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly happy with the record, because you don't know, like, from one day to the next, if you're going to have players or not have players, or games might be canceled. We've lost a few guys to COVID. We've lost our coaching staff to COVID. We had to shut down for a little bit. And you've just got to find a way to keep winning games to stay in the hunt. Because you don't know what's ahead. Are you going to lose half your team? You know, win some games and get a cushion if you can for when those times might present themselves. So happy with that. Happy with the games with Colorado. They're a very good team. They've got great speed. They've got some real talent. And you have an opportunity to see your team against a real good team and say, okay, this is where we're good. We're happy with this part of our game. And this other part of our game, we need to improve on. And it helps you see those things clearly. And because there's always something to work on. Otherwise, you're getting complacent.
You said early on in this podcast that the two teams were playing their two number one goalies. Well, your number one goalie right now is Marc-Andre Fleury.
Right.
And it's amazing how the worm has turned when you consider what went on in the bubble in Edmonton, when it looked like Robin Leonard was there to take that. So do you view it as a competition? Do you view it as going with the flow and we're just riding the hot man?
Well, Robin Leonard's injured right now. So do I see it as a competition? Not really. Do I see it as riding a hot guy? Not really. I really like alternating the goaltenders. Mm-hmm. Keep them fresh. Play every other game. They know what game they're playing. They know what days are off days or work days in practice to get ready for the next game. I like what I've seen in other teams that have gone this route, whether it's the Islanders doing what they've done or the Bruins doing what they've done. I like keeping the goaltenders fresh, and alternating is fine by me. And that's what we had planned on doing this year. And we'll see where it goes. When Robin comes back, I hope we get back to alternating again. And we'll see.
Sorry, George, for talking over.
That's okay.
Let's take a quick break. We'll come back with more on the podcast. With the president of the Vegas Golden Knights, George McPhee, he's in Denver. They're getting ready to take on Colorado again. One of the things that we've addressed very briefly on this podcast is, given the nature of this season, the COVID situation, the start of the year, where we are now, how would you classify your conversations with other general managers regarding trades? Do you think it will be busy or do you think it will be slow?
Well, first of all, Kelly does that for us now. And, but we, Kelly and I work so well together. It's, it's been a real pleasure, working with him. There hasn't been a lot of dialogue, with respect to trades, so far. Lots of reasons for that. Certainly, everybody's tight on the cap, so it's hard just to move a guy.
Right.
But it's, and then the, all the quarantining that's involved. If you do trade for a guy, you may not see him for 2 weeks. So can you afford to do that? Have a guy on your cap who's not playing for a couple of weeks. Every point matters. So, so that's become a factor. So far, there hasn't been a lot of discussion. I guess we'll see what happens as we move along. I imagine it'll pick up as you get closer to the trading deadline. And but I have no idea whether it'll be really active or not.
Hey, do you miss the, you talked about you and Kelly working so close together. Do you miss that day-to-day managerial stuff? Or is it done now for you?
Yeah, I don't miss, certainly I enjoy talking to other managers, but I don't miss the chasing down trades and doing all that. And just, I don't miss that. Kelly does all the grunt work there and brings everything back. And then he and I sit and talk about possibilities. But you know, my life hasn't changed a whole lot other than I'm not talking to the GMs and I'm not dealing with the media a whole lot. Everything else has been the same in terms of trying to run the hockey club. So, and I think it's been, Kelly's been doing a fantastic job for us. And I think it really helps a guy, especially a first time manager at this level, to have another guy to talk things through with.
Sure.
So we've had good chemistry and, hopefully we'll continue to do the right things for the club.
Do you think this is a structure that you're going to see a lot more, like a president of hockey ops? We're seeing it more. There might be up to 7 or 8, but this whole concept of a president of hockey ops and a general manager as a tandem, you think that's, you know, what, 5 years from now that every team will have it?
I don't know what the future holds, but I do think it's become a really hard job for one guy. I think having two guys sort of do it and having a guy that's been a general manager work with another general manager is really helpful. I respect the position so much that I'm trying to give Kelly all the room he needs to do what he thinks is right for the club. But I do think it's really helpful to have someone to talk through every situation with. And I've tried to pass on as much as I know about the league and what to expect with waivers and all kinds of, all the things that you have to deal with. I had something else I wanted to say about it that has escaped me, but.
Let me ask you something then. We understand what you don't do now that you did as a general manager. What are your added responsibilities in being president? What things come under your jurisdiction that didn't before?
Well, I spend more time with ownership in talking through everything with the business, and I'm spending more time on the business side and making sure that everything they do works with the club. And obviously I did that before. I just have more time now.
Sure.
you know, there are so many things that you have to deal with in this, in these positions, as a manager, that it's kind of nice. Like in Kelly doesn't have to worry about that. He can focus on the hockey club and I'll deal with all the business stuff. And, you know, it's little things, but they add up. And, you know, the latest issue is, you know, sponsorship has, with one of our sponsors, promised so many appearances from the players with that company. Well, that's got to go through us first. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not making it, you know, you come to us first, we'll tell you whether we think it makes sense, and then you can take it to the sponsor. Just little things. And the thought that I had that had escaped me for a minute, you know, the other thing that we're dealing with in Vegas is we now have two teams and four facilities.
Right.
You know, we've got NHL and American League in four buildings. So there's more to do.
I was going to mention that. For those that aren't aware, you just started, well, you have your minor league team in Henderson. Well, sort of. Not quite in Henderson yet. Henderson is, by the way, is, for those that aren't aware, a suburb of Las Vegas. And it's a pretty good-sized suburb.
400,000 people.
Yeah, there you go. And it when I say suburb, I mean it butts right up against Vegas. It's not like 10 miles away or anything like that.
It's like Mississauga.
Very much like Mississauga. Advantages of that are, I would think, enormous. And those that are familiar with the Toronto situation with the Marlies would understand, you know, having all your players, 40, 50 of them all essentially in one place, gives you options you wouldn't have, right?
It's cumulative. We had a lot of players, young guys, come out to Vegas this summer to train because we have the facilities, and they know that's where they're going to be for the next year. So it's easy to come out, get a place. Mm-hmm. And so it's nice when, you know, we can't mandate that, but a lot of guys volunteer, and it's nice that we can get our hands on them in the summer to help them. Obviously, you can get your apartment, your place to live, and you're not going anywhere, whether you've been called up or sent down. You're in the same place.
Right.
And it's just generating the interest level has been really neat. And, you know, if you're trying to attract players, if you're trying to attract a good American League player for your team, well, it's a pretty nice situation to be in Vegas with the climate, the taxes, situations. It's a really nice place to be. And you could move players back and forth. And we basically sold out all of our tickets for those games. You know, it'd be nice to get our fans in there, but
yeah,
we've got, I think 10 or 12 games on local television for the Henderson Silver Knights.
No kidding.
Wow. Yeah, on one of the NBC affiliates. We've sold out. The sponsorship has gone really well. That team is going to do real well financially. So, and, you know, if you're trying to watch your players, it's pretty easy for us. Right now they're playing at the Orleans. I can leave my house and be there in 7 minutes.
Yep.
So we play one night, go and watch them the next night, you know, leave the house at, 20 after six, watch warm up, watch the game, and be home at 9:30.
Our Golden Knights fans, Silver Knights fans, George?
I think we've been, it's two sort of distinct groups. We've had lots of people that may not be able to afford our tickets buying these tickets up. Mm-hmm. So we've been really the interest level in hockey in Vegas has been extraordinary, as you know. You know, we've been sold out, you know, and now our American League team is sold out. Who'd have thought that five years ago? You know,
I asked John earlier about where the Silver Knights are playing. He indicated that you're building, or there is a new arena being built in Henderson. Is that true?
Yes. There was and it's in a beautiful area in Green Valley. And, Bob, like you've got the strip. We're 15 minutes away on one side of the strip, right up in Summerlin.
Yep.
And then if you're at the strip, Green Valley's like 7 minutes away.
Yeah, about that.
So yeah. So there was this this old pavilion, an open air sort of pavilion, and it was in need of repair, and it cost lots for upkeep every year. So the city of Henderson came to us and said, we hear you guys are looking for an American League team. If you get one and bring it to Vegas, we'd be interested in maybe building a rink for you here. Wow. And so I think they put in 30 or 40 million. We put in 30 or 40 million. And we're this facility is being constructed now. It's about a 6,000-7,000 seat arena. It's perfect. And we'll run the building and all the other events in the building. And then the practice facility is identical to the one that we have for the NHL club. That's on Water Street in downtown, in the old part of Henderson.
Okay.
And that it's up and running, and two ice sheets. And
great.
Yeah. And we've got all kinds of young boys and girls playing hockey. And adult leagues, lots of people come from everywhere to play tournaments. So now we've got all these facilities to accommodate them.
We haven't chatted since the Raiders arrived, and I don't need to tell you that there was a lot of chatter when it first appeared that the Raiders were going to land in Vegas as to what the impact of the football team would have potentially on the hockey team. It was debatable at the very least. Now, they've played a year in Vegas, but with no fans, so it may be hard to assess this as yet, but have you noted any impact?
Not really. Our sponsorship deals, even in the pandemic, continue to grow. We've had minimal numbers in terms of people, giving up their season tickets and wanting refunds, that sort of thing. That really hasn't happened. There will be some impact, needless to say, when you bring another, they're going to have their own fan base, but our numbers are really, really strong. And, we have a good story to tell. We're Vegas born. Mm-hmm. We're not a relocation. We didn't come in and ask for money to build a facility. Bill Foley has built two amazing practice facilities.
Yep.
Without a dime from anyone. And so that's the story we'll continue to sell, that we're Vegas born, and hopefully we keep winning and there's still lots of interest. But we've sold 52,000 license plates in Vegas for our team, which is amazing. And I'm starting to see some Raiders license plates, so maybe an impact there, but
yeah,
not a whole lot.
Hey, have you heard from Ron Francis at all?
He and Kelly have talked a little bit, mm-hmm, about some things, but they've been doing some staffing things, and if it's someone we know, we'll talk a little bit. But no, they haven't talked to us a whole lot about what to do.
Right.
I had a talk with Todd Lewicki a few years back. He came to Vegas and we sat down and had a great lunch, and I just told him when we were trying to do things. I've known Todd for a long time. We worked together in Vancouver, and I tried to be an open book and said, we just tried to be different. We just tried to do things different. We've got gray helmets. Nobody in the league wears gray helmets. We wear white gloves. Nobody in the league has done that. Now we're wearing gold helmets, and nobody in the league has done that. And so, we don't want to be the California Golden Seals. We want to be the Vegas Golden Knights, you know, and if we weren't winning, would people have made fun of white gloves? Maybe, right. But the winning has helped.
So it's curious about the expansion draft. You don't have to give up any players, do you?
No, we don't.
So we
would if they want to give us $17 million. We would.
Yeah, not a bad price for one guy. With that in mind, is there anything that you guys can do to take advantage of the expansion draft, i.e. be benevolent and take somebody from another team like you did so well when you had your original expansion draft?
Yeah, we've looked at it like that. Can we be a landing spot? Is there opportunity there for us? Can we make a trade with someone that... you know, where we trade someone that isn't eligible for expansion,
right?
For someone who is and can help us now, and that sort of thing. Of course, we've talked about that, and we're planning for that, and we'll see if anything develops.
Well,
that's a good question, John.
Yeah. Well, no, but I there has to be. I mean, George, you did such a marvelous job of leveraging your position, and whether it was with Florida, with Minnesota, with a few of the other teams, it's truly, I mean, there has to be an advantage for you. You're not going to get any expansion money, but you're not going to give up any players, but there has to be something good for you.
Well, the first advantage is you don't have to worry about losing somebody.
Right.
So any decisions we make, we're not worried about that, whereas all the other clubs have to think about that whenever they make a transaction. How does this affect us 6 months from now? Mm-hmm. So we don't have to worry about that. And then again, is there something we can do with another club or two to become a landing spot that helps them and helps us?
Yeah,
I think that's pretty obvious, and we'll see what we can do.
Before we let you go, it's been a while since we chatted. How you doing physically? For those that aren't aware, you had a medical procedure, had a little problem. You got it fixed. You were limping a little bit last time we talked. How you doing now?
It feels really good. I had a hip replacement, and it's interesting. I thought I had maybe a little labrum tear or something. And I just mentioned to our medical team, you know, I'd like to kind of get this looked at, and maybe somebody can go in and clean it out a little bit. They looked at it and said, "You've got no hope. You need a whole new engine, you know, so just get it done." And so I got it done, and I'm over here now, and I've been exercising and doing almost everything I want to do. I can play tennis. I can. I can run a little bit. And it's not as good as new, but it's pretty darn good.
But can you play tennis better?
No. I was never very good at that anyway. So I was mostly doing it for the workout.
Well, hopefully.
Thanks for asking.
We hope we all get through this pandemic, and that the end is in sight.
Well, we will. And, you know, we're excited about March 1st. We get to start having fans in our building.
Yeah.
We get about 20%.
I have one more question. With the fact that you're only playing seven other teams, is there a false confidence how good your team is? Because we're seeing it in Canada, that there's a real belief that there are five great teams in Canada. But you're only going to really know it until you get to the third round of the playoffs.
That's right.
Right.
So how do you measure that, George?
I think we're playing a team like Colorado that it's pretty clear they're a really good team. And so that's one way to measure it. And, you know, people can talk about some of the other clubs that might be struggling a little bit. You never know when one of those teams are going to turn the corner.
Right.
And be good, and could be this year. So, you know, you try to respect everybody you're playing against, and just, you know, I've got my fingers crossed, hoping, you know, we can just play well enough. Let's make the playoffs and go from there. Because you don't know. And it's hard playing, you know, when you play a team, you know, twice or three times in a row, it's hard to beat an NHL team twice. Doesn't matter whether you're a top team or a bottom team. You look at what St. Louis went through with Arizona. St. Louis is supposed to be a real good team. Arizona's on its way. Hard series. And it's, so it's hard. I'm just treat every game like, let's hope we can get 2 points tonight. And we'll be doing that all season.
Well, let's hope the end of this pandemic is near enough so that we can get together face to face over the next, as soon as possible. I do like that sweater.
You're not getting one. You're not getting one.
Oh, I'll buy one.
No, well, you will not. You don't buy anything. You don't buy anything, George.
I'll buy one.
Oh, please.
Okay, guys. You know what? Thank you for having me, and I will. I'll be sending a couple along.
Here. No. That's not that.
That a boy, George. That a boy.
They're not available. They're not available in retail shops just yet. So.
Oh, they aren't. Oh.
No.
Oh,
now I'll, Bob I'll wants go, one.
Yeah, I'll go. I'll talk to the equipment staff, and we'll take care of you guys, and you'll be sporting them in Toronto.
Atta boy, George.
You're very kind, but that was not the end.
Oh, I'm tired of.
I know that, Bob.
You know, I got to put up with Shannon. You know, like
this isn't the first time I've sent swag to people, so don't worry about it.
John is desperate.
Make the request. Yeah.
John is desperate.
You guys will look good. You guys will look good.
Oh, man.
Yeah. You do look beautiful, though, McPhee. And I look forward to buying you lunch or dinner or whatever you want on the next trip to Vegas whenever we get down there.
It would be great to have you guys out here. And these interviews are always a pleasure. You guys are fantastic. Thank you.
You're the best. We thank you. Stay healthy, and we'll talk again down the road.
Take care, guys. Thank you very much.
He is the president of the Vegas Golden Knights, George McPhee, with us on the podcast today. We'll see you next time. Goodbye, everybody.